Welcome back, everyone. Welcome to our TV audience and to our audience here in the Southern Alberta Council on Public Affairs Chamber. This afternoon, we're discussing the University of Lethbridge at 40, the interesting past, the relevant present, and the exciting future. What are they planning and what are the challenges? And our guest speaker today is Dr. William H. Bilcade, who is the President and Vice Chancellor at the University of Lethbridge. So please let us welcome him again, and we will be taking questions. When we have questions, as Bill has already reminded you, please introduce yourself, and we would like your questions to be questions and to be brief and succinct, because we want to get as many questions in as we possibly can. So, ladies and gentlemen, Dr. Bill Cage.
Thank you, Shirley. I think Howard is first. Is that right?
Howard Forsyth. I sometimes say that since I've been alert since the 1920s, I may ask questions nobody else can think of. There are so many questions and so many points of praise for this marvelous presentation, and what a marvelous place to be in the world with a university like that. There's no other place in the world as favorable to civilized living as this little corner of Alberta.
What it will do, this university will be on top of it. Here's one thing that came up the other day when we were talking, and I wanted to mention it because it's fabulous. They're going to set up a child care what do you call it? Spaces for two small slices of the total population, which are brilliantly critical. Those women, bright enough to go to university, already energetic enough to be there, who will be our world leaders when the time comes, as I look forward to it, maybe I'll be gone, when all leadership will be gender neutral, they're ready to go. And then the other slice is children maybe 6 and under. One of the biggest neglected slices of our total population all over North America and maybe the civilized world. And they're going to accelerate both of them by another of the projects he didn't talk about. Bill, say something very brief about how brilliant it was for them to select two little pieces of the population, which will have a fantastic effect on the future of Canada, if other people learn how to do it.
Thank you, Howard. Can't imagine a world without you, Howard. Let me tell you about Howard, though. Howard grew up in Howard was in San Antonio during a time when the greats were all there, the people that built the city that is now such, I think, a fine city. The Henry B. Gonzalez, the Maury Mavericks, and those are names that I've known my whole life. He knew them. He knew them personally. And I've always found that fascinating.
And a woman candidate for mayor. I lost her name.
So have I. There's a number of ways I could answer Howard's question. Some of it you know because Brian Kolb has spoken at your gathering before. But there's something called adverse childhood experiences, ACE. And it's something that's been pioneered in San Diego at the Kaiser Permanente medical school there. And a man named Vincent Folletti is a physician that has done all the work. He has a sample of 400,000 people. And essentially what ACE is, it's a measure of the adverse childhood experiences that everybody has. You've had them, I've had them. And they're additive. So the loss of a parent is one. Being raped is one. Being beaten is one. A parent going to prison is one. Growing up poor is one. And they're all additive. And so if you have 5 ACEs, it's not good. 10's the max you can have. There's 10 of these childhood experiences that they've identified. Now, what they also did was to look forward to what happened to people as a result of how many of ACE scores they had. And you know what happens. I mean, the more your ACE scores, the more likely you are to be in prison, the more likely you are to have heart disease, the more likely you are to be a rapist, the more likely you know, it's it's very clear that what's happening in our species as we go from birth to death, and even before birth, is that those experiences that we're having early on in our lives are shaping many of the problems that we have later in our society. And so Brian Kolb, this is the tie-in with the University of Lethbridge. Brian Kolb is going to play the lead role for the Norlian Foundation. The Norlian Foundation is the Mannix Foundation in Calgary. And they have been very generous in their donations to the university to allow Brian to take up this particular message to people about how we've got to start paying attention to how we structure childhood experiences if we're ever going to solve some of the most significant problems that plague our society today. So you'll hear more about this. I'd encourage you to have Brian back. Brian, as you all know, is just a wonderful speaker, and his own work with rats is the reason why they're going to Brian. It's because rats are a model for humans. You expose rats to trauma in their childhood, like put a cat in the room with them, they have social problems later in life. Or Sergio Pellis. Sergio, there was a piece in the paper recently, Caroline, I think you might have written that, about how if you don't allow rats to play with each other when they're juveniles, you have completely abnormal social behavior later on. No reason to think we're any different. Your brain and my brain is a mammalian brain. And, you know, it should behave in much the same way, even though they're rats and, well, some of us are, too.
Hello, my name is John Deal. Please excuse my appearance. I cycled from the west side here, otherwise I would dress up a little more. But I have two questions for you. The first question is about the university, and I read the paper the other day about acquiring a building or potential downtown, and I just wondered what that might have on the maybe the urban renewal project of the city. And my second question is the university undergoing its visioning process again next year for the whole year. What do you see might come of that, and what do you see might change from that, or how the process might unfold, and how the community might be involved in that?
Thank you, John. And John, I'm glad you cycled over here. John is a committed environmentalist. He also wears his bicycle helmet. The first thing I wanted to know when John and I started talking last week. Yes, it's very possible we will have a downtown building in the near future, and some people know which building it is, some don't. It has not appeared in the news yet, and I'm not going to say which one it is. But we think that we have a role to play in downtown Lethbridge. The mayor and I have talked about this a number of times. I used to joke with the mayor about how I can look out my office window, and if I could throw a rock, I could throw it and hit downtown. So, but I do know there's a bridge in between, and I know there are some people who don't think that bridge is a good place to travel on to come over to the other side. But we are part of our problem. I mean, we do have a major economic development role in the city already. I hope that was clear from what I said. But I think we have a role to play in the revitalization of downtown, too. But what is driving it for us is the need for space. We are just desperate for space. And so we're looking at things that we can do in a downtown building that do not have to be on campus. Faculty have to be on campus. Students have to be on campus. Are there some of the support functions that we have within the university that don't have to be there? So please stay tuned. It won't be too long until you'll know the details of it. But we're working with the owner of the building, and in time we would become the owner of the building.
What was your second question?
Oh, strategic plan. Thank you. Yes. John's right. Our strategic plan started in 2003. It runs till 2008, but we have a brand new vice president of academic coming in. We have a number of new deans that are going to be appointed. We've hired a lot of faculty. We've hired about 100 faculty in the last 5 years. New positions. We have a new board chair. It looks like a good time to take a look at the strategic plan and see what we should do. Now, I'm a cynic about strategic planning. I've seen strategic plans that are that thick, and they end up being doorstops. So when we got into this 5 years ago, I said, I don't want a big lengthy thing. I want something you can read in 5 minutes, and I wanted to have realistic goals in it. And I think we were pretty successful. You can see our strategic plan and our strategic plan report card on our website. But the main advantage of strategic planning within the university environment is you talk to each other. You talk to each other about what you want to be over the next few years. It's not up to me to decide what we want to be when we're 10 years from now. It's up to all those people that work there and study there now, as well as people in the community. It took us a year to do it last time. It was the first time, I believe, that we'd had that kind of conversation about ourselves in some time, and it was really informative. As a new person, I learned a great deal about the university during that time period. We will be having a number of open sessions, town hall meetings, as we did last time around. This time, we're going to focus those meetings on particular topics. So John planted the seed in my brain a few days ago that why don't you think about environmental responsibility as being one of the areas that you have quite a bit of discussion in, and we're going to do that. I think that's an excellent idea. I mean, I think we're a pretty good environmental citizen already. John knows why I think that, and we agree at least on some of those points, I hope. But you can always do better. Remember what I said? The greatest challenge for us right now is to be satisfied with who we are, and that leads to mediocrity. So that's the plan.
Terry Shillington, Bill, thank you for coming and for presenting. I'd like to humor you by asking about the medical issue. It surfaced, caught me by surprise when it surfaced. Threefold question: where is the status of that proposal? Where do you stand on it? And can you help me understand the sense of it, given the why the province would need three medical colleges when so many other issues that the university already does reasonably well could be enhanced?
Thank you, Terry. Yes, I do have come up with a question, and I'll answer it as best I can. This is an issue that caught us completely by surprise, frankly. We didn't have a medical education program on our sites, and I'd have to say we still don't. I cannot allow this to be a priority for the university. If this is a priority for the university, it's going to push everything else aside, because it is very expensive and it's very time-consuming, and medical schools change universities. Our university, what we're proud of, would be completely changed if we had a medical school here. Now, it was driven at UNBC by the citizens of Prince George. They were determined that they would have to have better health care in Prince George. And they got together and they developed the political force necessary to make the province realize that they needed to have additional spaces for training physicians and other healthcare professionals. I've said the same thing's got to happen here if it's going to happen at all. And the mayor knows how I feel, and I'm sure you've seen the mayor talk about this, or you soon will see the mayor talk about this. We can do it, we could do it, but it cannot be a priority for us right now at this time. It's gotta be a priority for Lethbridge and the southern tier of the province. We've met with the health region, we've met with the other universities, we've met with physician groups. It can be done, but the joke amongst presidents is, what is president's hell? It's a university with a med school. let me add something, too. It would drastically change the liberal arts undergraduate nature of the university, and I don't want to be the one responsible for casting aside all of that. Having said that, province comes to us and says, this is something we want to do, we serve the province.
Thank you, sir.
Bob Anderson. Bill, I'd like to ask you to talk about something I think you haven't talked about yet. During the 60s, I was involved with the university, and the students were alive, let's say. They occupied our offices. As a dean, they cleaned out my office and then came in and had coffee with me. They didn't mean it, didn't do any harm, but they were certainly alive in the 60s. Then I saw a subsequent failing in terms of their liveliness. Many students were there to get a job and get out. That's a bit crude, but I think that's what it was. What I'd like you to do is put your hand on the pulse of the university student at Lethbridge now. What do you feel when you take their pulse?
Well, thank you, Bob. That's a topic that we talk a lot about. Aaron, at Aaron's house with Herman and Enid Gahn the other night, we talked about this very topic. A lot of things have happened. First of all, universities have become very important to the career development of individuals. And when I left high school, some of my closest friends went to work. Some of them own construction companies, Dell. They've done very well. They couldn't do that nowadays. I mean, nowadays, you need that higher education to... We know that there's a direct correlation between the number of years of higher education you have, your lifelong earning capacity, your satisfaction with your life, your satisfaction with your job, the health, how long you live. All those things are reasons why people should have a higher participation rate in this province. Now, Aaron doesn't agree with me, and you're not going to agree with me either, Bob. I think we have widened the base of students that come into universities. So as we've widened the base, of course, we have more and more students who some are not as committed, some are not as well-educated in high school, but we have an obligation to educate them too. But I still maintain the most serious students I've ever seen in my life are the ones that are coming to university now. There's people like John and Matthew that came by to see me. There are stunning students in your university and in our universities, plural. But there's certainly a view amongst faculty, some founding fathers, some new faculty, that students aren't as well prepared as they used to be. I don't see any empirical evidence of that. The students I see are top-notch students. And as I said to Herman and Enid and Aaron the other night, of course, when I was a dean for 10 years, I saw all kinds of students. They still let me teach them, you know? They don't let me teach anymore. Well, they would if I insisted, but my schedule changes. When I was a dean, I saw the really good students, and I saw the students who were in trouble, because that's what deans do. Deans make things happen. Deans counsel students. I don't see the ones in trouble anymore. I only see the really good students. So I'm prepared to admit I have a sampling bias, Bob, there. I was at a meeting with Premier Klein during the last week of his premiership. It was at the Alberta Economic Development Authority, and there was an oil man in the room who, I'm not going to mention his name, but there were 20 or so of us there. And he was complaining to the Premier about some of the things Bob just said about students. All they want is a job. All they want is to come in and earn $60,000 a year. And I was just sitting there steaming, you know. So I let him go on for a while, and I said, I want to stick up for students. I'm going to stick up for students, and I said what I just said to you. The best students, the most serious students I've ever seen are those that are coming into our universities nowadays. Irene Lewis was in the room. She's the president of SAIT, and she could tell I was boiling. And Irene smiled, and she said, Mr. Premier, you've heard two opposing views, one from the oil man, one from Bill. Who do you agree with? The Premier, I'm kissing. Well, maybe not. He said, I agree with Bill. So I think, look, that's just how I approach my life. I have my whiny moments. I have my moments of being down. Usually they happen at 3 o'clock in the morning. But in my role as president of the university, I look for all the positive things that are happening, and the net is positive by far.
Well, you have Terry Lynn Fox, who started from nowhere.
We do.
She was here a couple of weeks ago.
We do. As I said, universities change people's lives. They really do. I mean, I think I would have been a pretty good auto mechanic. And I held the record at the San Antonio Drag Raceway in my Chevy. I did. I used to drive a Chevrolet 409, 2.4s, 456 positive traction. I thought I was hot. My mother said, no. You're going to school. And yeah, I did. And I ended up liking school, and things worked out all right for me. You know, I think, let me tell you something that I neglected to say in my speech, and I'm sorry I went so long, but it's such a wonderful place to talk about. Phyllis Singer. I think many of you knew Phyllis and knew Leo, and of course Leo and Phyllis played a significant role in founding the University of Lethbridge. Phyllis passed away a few months ago, and the university has benefited from the receipt of Phyllis's own personal wardrobe. As well as all the garments that were left in Leo's shop. I'll use his name. I never met him. But so we have received thousands of garments in our costume shop, which will be used in our dramatic productions. And if you have a chance, and we can set it up for you, if you have a chance, you need to go see the Phyllis Singer collection. It's a small percentage of it. And Phyllis, I mean, there's 160 pairs of shoes. They're all in superb shape. Some of them are red snakeskin. There's 140 hats. My wife loves hats. They're not ours, mind you. You walk in the room, there's Phyllis's wedding dress. I mean, Phyllis kept everything in pristine shape. And what a treasure for your university to receive this. I mean, there's cashmere sweaters, there's Leo's curling sweater, there's five tuxedos, there's what I think are probably a pair of Leo's boxer shorts in there. They're clean. Anyway, the Singer collection has actually been set up in a separate room, and if you'd like to see it, contact us and we can set that up for you.
Bill, my mother sent me off to college when there was no university in Calgary.
Use the mic.
Oh, this seems to be honest. Teachers College, grade 11.
Mothers are very important.
Good afternoon, John Boris. I have just a comment to make about what happened to my family, you might say. I started in university without any grade past 9, never even finished grade 9. When I was in the service, I got a chance to bring that up, and I went into active university. I couldn't get into law, which I dreamed about doing, and so I got into agriculture economics. And then 10 years later, I got into law. And I think I was a pretty good student at about 37 or 38 years of age. And what I decided in our own household was that I would make every effort to give my kids an education. And I would push and push and push and push till they did. Out of 5 children, 3 of them had their first year at U of M. I says, I was on city council. That's our business. You go there. And they did go there. And they went. They all left. There isn't one in Lethbridge, but they're just about, well, except for one. They're all in post-secondary education and jobs that are top-notch. And, you know, that's something that they will never, never lose. And I think it's been successful, and I think you could do something by promoting something like take the first year and have some fun. Go to university, fail a few classes, and find out how things are, and then go back. And I think it would be a good idea. Thanks. I don't know if I've ever met you. I've seen you around, but I don't circle like I used to when I ran for election. Thank you.
Okay, I'll confess to something. I love cars so much. I went to one of the best high schools in the state of Texas, Alamo Heights High School. 354 people in the graduating class. Guess what number I was? Way down. And I barely got into the University of Texas. My mother and father went there. I'd read in Playboy magazine a couple years before that it was a party school, the first classes, but that's for me. I get there. And of course, that's not the way it was. It was busy taking all that oil money they have, turning it into a top-notch research university. My first semester, John, at the University of Texas at Austin, I made 1 D, 1 C, and 2 Fs. I had a really good time. And they put me on scholastic probation. And you know, I'm going to tell you something. Now, this is true. Frankly, the reason I started studying is I didn't want to get kicked out of school and drafted. And it was in the mid-60s, and that's exactly what would have happened to me. So I still loved auto mechanics. I still had that fast car. But I certainly didn't want to be working in the jungles of Southeast Asia. And that kept me in school. Now, I did find that I loved school. My mother wanted me to be a medical doctor, just like my father, who was named Bill Cade. His father was named Bill Cade. His father was named Bill Cade. My father and all his brothers were medical doctors, and you know, I just thought, okay, you know, I'll do that. I go off to university, and I had absolutely no interest in medicine at all. But I discovered I liked biology, and so that's how I ended up being with you today. My mother had a huge influence on me. John, you're entirely right. When I speak to students, when I speak to first-year students at orientation, I say this is going to be the most exciting time of your life. It's very important that you do well in school, but it's also very important that you form friendships, that you join clubs, that you go to athletic events, and so on and so forth. And you can do it all if you know how to manage your time. You're right.
Hi, I'm Linda Green.
One really quick question. I have some friends who want to use the track at the university in the new Health and Wellness Center and are told that they can't. They said that they're not allowed to use it. So I just wondered if that's true. That's very minor. The other one is about Aboriginal programs. What faculties, what programs do you have with Aboriginal communities now? Thanks.
Thank you, Myrna. Let me take the second question first, and I'll come back to the track. We founded the Native American Studies Department. It was the second one in Canada. First one was founded at Trent, but this one was founded soon thereafter. And they have pioneered research and education on Native people. We have a large research grant now with the Social Sciences and Humanities Research Council called the CURA, Community University Research Alliance, which involves Red Crow College. It involves School District 51, a college in Montana, Blackfoot College in Montana, and the University of Lethbridge is the home to it. We have recently hired, this is by accident, really and truly, we have recently hired a number of young scholars that are experts on Hispanic America, and where they focus in Hispanic, and some people say Latin America, right? I like the term Hispanic America. I don't think the Romans had a lot to do with it. But Hispanic America, and their focus there is the indigenous people of the Americas. So it goes beyond Aboriginal education for the people whose valley we live in, the Kainai. But I think what we're seeing is the development of an incredible amount of strength on education and research on indigenous people. The track, that building is a municipal building in many respects. The city donated $5.2 million to it. The students taxed themselves to the tune of $2.5 million to it. The condition the city attached to it was that it would be open for everyone, but you got to buy a membership. That's the key. And so there is community dedicated